Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Kilmeade. This is Kilmeade and Friends. And arguably, of all the years I've been doing the radio show, I don't remember a week where there is more potential for huge news. It's one of these weeks where we're going to remember that week in June when everything hit the fan. Emergency votes on the highway bill, on Arizona immigration coming down, the future of that bill, the future of that law coming down to the Supreme Court's ruling, and the major one, the future of Obamacare, at the very least, the mandate that makes everybody get health insurance. And with us in studio to discuss that in his brand new book, An American Son, Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida. Senator, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, writing this book, the timing now, why was this the right time to bring it up?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I thought I had something to add to the narrative of what was going on today in America. I wanted to pay testament to the American dream through our experience. And the American dream means a lot of different things to people. But for my family, it's meant my parents' ability to leave us better off than ourselves. And so the book talks about that journey that began 100 years ago when my grandfather was born in 1899 in rural Cuba, and the hopes and dreams he had for himself, and the story of my father growing up in Havana, losing his mom when he was very young, and working basically every day of his life since, and the sacrifices and the hard work that they made when they came to this country, and a decade later when I was born in this country, and the experiences that we had there. So I wanted to pay homage to the American dream through the experiences of my parents. I also had some things to share about my own life in terms of both good decisions I've made and bad decisions, and the struggle of balancing work and life and family and all those sorts of things. The timing is when the book was ready. I mean, it was ready to be launched, and we were ready to do it now here in the summer. And we're excited to be able to do it when the kids are out of school and they can go with me to promote it a little bit.
I think it was Socrates that said, an unexamined life is not worth living. But it seems like you were jotting things down along the way. Was there a point in your life, and I know that there's not an egotistical cell in your body, where you thought, my story is going to be noteworthy, and I want to remember how the journey was.
Well, I think there are millions of people who have similar stories. The difference is I'm in a position to tell
where
it.
Where you are now.
Yeah, and so I'm in a position to tell it. I mean, but there are other people that have even more extraordinary lives, and I always remind people that some of the most extraordinary stories are the ones you'll never hear. They're everyday people that I meet from all walks of life, for example, who have sacrificed a tremendous amount and opened up a business and today employ people because they took a tremendous risk, or they volunteer countless hours in a local charity and are really touching the lives of real people. They're never going to be on the cover of a magazine, but their stories are really special. I wanted to tell the story of my parents because my mom and dad, I think for all of us, it's important to remind ourselves, our parents were once our age. And when they were our age, they had hopes, they had dreams for themselves, they had things they wanted to be. My dad always wanted to be a businessman. My mom dreamt of being an actress. Things just weren't possible for them. I mean, they had a different life and a different reality. And the one thing they instilled in us from a very young age is the notion or the idea that we would be able to do things they never had a chance to do, that we would have the chance to reach for things that they never could accomplish. And one of the reasons was because I was an American son, because I was born in this great country with these great opportunities. And so I wanted to tell that story because it's our version of the American dream. My parents' American dream never became about how much money they made or how many homes they owned. It became about giving us the chance to do the things they couldn't. And I think that is still going on today. And there are people out there as we speak that are trying to do that. And obviously, I believe that I've reached some political conclusions in my life based on that. Mm-hmm.
Senator Marco Rubio, the guest, but you know his voice, and his book is called An American Son. Now, Senator, in the Arizona law that's going to be examined, now that's being overshadowed, understandably, by the Obamacare and the future of the health mandate by the Supreme Court decision. In the Arizona law, they want the ability to be up to somebody that is not a legal citizen to say, you got to have your paperwork with you. And they also want to say it's illegal to apply if you're a citizen, if you're here illegally, to apply for a job. Are those some of the things that does that bother you about this, the Arizona law?
And one of the things I talk about in the book is during my campaign, the Arizona law became reality, and I was asked about it. And initially, I didn't like it because it sounded to me like the police was going to be able to pull people over who looked a certain way, and that's the way it was being portrayed in the media. The Arizona legislature changed that, by the way. They went back and very specifically said that you couldn't do that. And then I started to examine the issue more carefully. I don't live in Arizona, but I started to learn about what was happening in Arizona, and I got to talk to people who lived in Arizona. Arizona. And I came to realize that what Arizona has is a problem that's very unique and different from Florida, right. For example. I talk about in the book how Florida, we have an immigration problem. We have an illegal immigration problem, largely visa overstays. But what Arizona has is a broken border. And it was especially acute at the time. And it wasn't just about immigration. I mean, it was about security. It was about drugs and guns and human trafficking. And they were fed up. They were tired of having to deal with violence in their state, and they looked to the federal government. The federal government wasn't doing anything about it, and so they acted through their state legislature. I understand why they did it. I think they have the constitutional right to do it, but I don't think it's a good idea, ultimately, to have every state in the country have its own immigration laws.
If someone makes a statement where we should build a wall on our southern border, is that anti-Hispanic?
No, I don't think so, especially in light of the fact that what's happening in Mexico is not just immigration anymore. I mean, there's violence, there's drugs, there's guns, there's human trafficking. I think you have to improve border security. I think it's good for both sides because the lack of border security leads to the creation of a real humanitarian crisis in the desert there. I also think we have to remind ourselves, however, that the illegal immigration problem, by and large, the illegal immigration problem is an issue of people, by and large, who are in search of a better life, who are desperate to provide kids and families with opportunities that they can't find in their home country. And that, you know, we would, if our kids were hungry, if our kids were starving, we would seek that opportunity as well. So, look, that's why I talk about in the book why immigration is a very complicated issue. It's not black or white. It's not this way or that way. It's a balance between the humanitarian reality of these people and what they're facing and what they're struggling with, and the fact that America has to have immigration laws that are enforced.
What was wrong with the Bush effort to reform immigration?
Well, look, I think the Bush effort to reform immigration was well-intentioned. The problem with policy is you can never put in place immigration policies that encourage people to illegally immigrate in the future. We have to have a legal immigration system that's modernized. But if you make any changes to that system that send out the message that if you come here illegally, you're going to get it's cheaper, quicker, and faster than if you come here legally, you're going to create the incentive for people to do that again in the future. And I thought Mitt Romney had a great line the other day when he gave a speech at Naleo in Orlando last Thursday, where he said, we have to make legal immigration more attractive than illegal immigration. He's absolutely right. And that's the problem. I thought at the end of the day, the way it was drafted, the way it was crafted, would create an incentive or the message that perhaps people should come here illegally in the future. One last point I want to make on this, and I talk about it in the book as well. No one ever talks about this, but it's important to remind us that there are millions of people, millions of Hispanics in Latin America waiting to immigrate legally to the United States.
Right.
They've waited, they've paid their fees, they've filled out the paperwork. Our message to them cannot be, come illegally, it's cheaper and faster.
Oh, exactly. I agree with you. But what I don't understand is, as a guy who's Irish and Italian, how, if you say you should be here legally, and if you're illegally, I have a problem with that, why is that anti-Hispanic? I personally believe that if there was a problem on the northern border with the Canadians slipping in and, you know, whatever, if the Russians went into Canada and then from Canada, I would think it would be the same issue. I just think it's the leaky borders, lack of security, which worries Americans most.
Well, look, is there a small minority of people in this country that whose rhetoric on this issue is motivated by something, of course. And then I got to be honest with you, sometimes, and I talk about this in the book, when I hear some of these more extreme voices, whether it's in a blog post or, you know, a comment on those comments that come after a story in a newspaper or whatever, you sometimes get the sense that there's more at play here than just immigration. But at the end of the day, after having traveled the state of Florida and campaigning, talking about this issue to people all over the country, the enormous majority of people are just frustrated that we don't have a legal immigration system that works and are frustrated by the impact of illegal immigration.
Why did President Bush get 46% of the Hispanic vote just a short time ago?
Yeah.
And why is Mitt Romney lucky to get 35?
Well, two things. First of all, the issue of immigration back then was just different. You know, 10 years ago, a decade ago, illegal immigration just wasn't as controversial an issue. No, people weren't in favor of it, but it wasn't as acute. It hadn't gone as long as it's gone now. Now we're going on a decade and a half of an illegal immigration problem that has been unaddressed at the federal level. And every year that goes by, the political space to operate on that issue gets narrower as people become more frustrated with illegal immigration and the debate becomes more heated. The second thing we have to remember is, you know, President Bush, because of his history in Texas, had a longstanding relationship with Hispanic communities there because of the border state nature of Texas. There's a historical reality here. There are Hispanics, voters, that happen to also be liberal Democrats. They're not going to change their vote this year just because Republicans you know, change their position on immigration. They disagree with us on a bunch of other things as well. So I think this idea about attracting or making the Republican Party and conservatism more attractive to Americans of Hispanic descent is really about a long-term commitment to explaining why the benefits of the American free enterprise system and why we stand for that and the Democrats are undermining
it. And my last question on this topic, Senator, would be, if I'm here legally, if I'm an Hispanic family that applied and I'm here for first generation, second, and I see people sneaking in, getting jobs, establishing, not paying taxes, I would be resentful of them, even if they were Hispanic like me. Why isn't there more uproar and support for support against illegal immigration from the Hispanic community?
Well, and that, and I actually, that's a great point, a great question. I talk about that in the book. There is, and it's a balancing act. On the one hand, I talk about in the book my own feelings on this issue. On the one hand, I am frustrated when I hear stories of people that come to Miami, for example, and deliberately have their kids at one of our public hospitals so their kids could be born U.S. citizens, and then they leave. It's a plan to pull that off. There's a very small number of people, but there's a, if just one person does that, it annoys you. It makes you mad. Absolutely. On the other hand, you know, you also know people that are here illegally. They came legally and their visa expired, and you know their stories. They're just, you know, they don't want to go back home because they can't provide for their families there, and they're desperate to provide for their children. And you know that if you felt the way they did, you may be in the same position.
Right.
And that balance in the Hispanic community is very real, and it's a tough thing to reconcile.
To
and that's why I approach the issue in a more balanced way on it, because I understand both arguments.
See, I don't understand entitlements when it comes to the economy. You can debate forever. To me, this is really an issue where if Democrats would agree to handle the border first— and having 2 years, it kick in some of the legislation that would allow the illegals, some illegals, to stay here if they pass a certain criteria, you're fine. But if you could secure the border first, unlike what Ronald Reagan was able to do, where he thought they could secure the border, but they never did, they declared amnesty for everyone that was here, and it didn't stop anything. It made things worse. So Ronald Reagan, for whatever political reason, did not get the border secure, so therefore it blew up, and everyone's saying, not again. We're not going to get caught with that again.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and I've described it. If we could, first of all, you got to win the confidence of the American people so that they'll support you in your efforts to reform all of this. And the way you win your confidence is you begin to enforce your immigration laws by securing, by continuing to secure the border. I think it's important to recognize there has been improvement at the border. We have to continue to make those improvements. And through an electronic verification system, an e-verify system that works, that people can use, it's good for business, it's good for the immigrant. If we do that, the second step would be to modernize our legal immigration system, to make it less bureaucratic, less complicated, and really be more aligned with the economic needs of the 21st century. If we do those two things, it'll never be easy to deal with the illegal immigrants that are here now, but it'll become easier. We'll have more options available to us.
You know, I know a lot of Republicans that voted for President Obama got 53% of the vote. I'm just wondering now, as he is done with his 3.5 years, what grade would you give him as we head to the close of his fourth year?
Well, I think it's a failing grade. I don't know if I would use a traditional grading scale to tell you that. I think this president will be measured like every incumbent president is measured. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And we're not. And we understand he inherited a bad economy that has gotten worse under his watch. And I think the big thing to look at is this election is about growth. How do we get our economy growing again? And I think both sides agree that that's what this election is about. The president's had 3.5 years to prove that what he stands for, his ideas, his policies, and his rhetoric will help with growth. And it hasn't worked. And he has to be judged by that. He's going to try to make this election about anything other than that. He's going to try to make it about the Arizona law and immigration and the Dream Act and you know, men versus women and rich versus
poor. And Bain Capital.
Well, they're going to want to make it about anything other than the fact that over the last 3.5 years, the American economy has grown at a stagnant and abysmal rate because of the anti-business rhetoric and policies of this administration. And in November, that's what this election is going to be about, no matter what the president tries to do.
Peggy Noonan wrote a column critical of Mitt Romney, saying you're going out not to lose and you're scaring a lot of Republicans who are supporting you. Stop with the applause line in your speeches. Get to some substance. Let us know why we should vote for you rather than just don't vote for the guy that's been there.
Well,
do you see some merit in that?
Well, I understand the point she's trying to make, but I think Governor Romney has done that. I mean, he talks about the problem is that I think people are looking for a trick play, you know, in sports, the double reverse or a flea flicker. We don't need that. The elements of what makes America's economy grow are pretty straightforward. It's the private sector. And what it needs from government is just predictability and normalcy. If we just had a functional government with predictable and permanent policies, the American people, as I talked about in my book, the American people people will do what they've done better than any people in the history of the world. They'll create jobs, they'll start businesses, they'll grow the economy.
Now, where was this book? You said the highest it's reached on Amazon before you started Fox and Friends today was what?
Well, it's been in the top five in nonfiction consistently. It's tough to beat The Hunger Games and all of that on the fiction list, but it's been in the top five in nonfiction, and it's fluctuated. It's been as high, I think, as 16 or 15.
I think we're going close to number one, and I'm going to feel personally responsible because you had the Fox and Friends and then Kill Me and Friends.
That's right.
And then you could see us live online. Hey, Senator, we always love having you on. Congratulations on the success. If the book ends now and you decide to bow out, you've already authored a great success story. This book is called An American Son. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, Senator.
Thank you.
All right. And now when we come back, Michael Goodwin will be in here, almost as sexy. Kill Me and Friends.
Getting past all the rhetoric. Kill Me and Friends.